Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, the Power of Bankruptcy Judges to Conclude Counterclaims Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 18, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Stern v. Marshall. When a creditor files a claim in bankruptcy court, the debtor is sometimes required to file any counterclaim she may have or lose the right to assert that claim later or in another court. The question in this case is whether a bankruptcy judge can conclusively resolve such compulsory counterclaims. To discuss the case, we have Professor Todd J. Zwicky, who is the George Mason University Foundation Professor of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Zwicky.
Hi, this is Todd Zwicky from George Mason University School of Law, and I'm here today to talk about the Stern versus Marshall case that's come before the Supreme Court. This is the second time this case came before the Supreme Court, and this time the stakes are much higher than the first time. By way of background, to understand the case itself has been arose from the ill-fated marriage or star-crossed marriage between former Playboy model and reality star, TV star, and stripper, Vicki Lynn Marshall, perhaps known to most people better as Anna Nicole Smith, who in the waning twilight of the life of Mr. Marshall entered into a marriage that lasted a little over a year. During that period, Mr. Marshall showered Ms. Smith with gifts, but then upon his death, he did not make any provision for her in his will, thereby essentially sending all of his estate assets to his children. That prompted a bout of litigation that has lasted now more than 10 times longer than the marriage between the two protagonists itself did. Basically, what happened was that, as is typical in a case like this, the case was originally went into Texas probate court for a challenge on the validity of the will. The Texas courts did their things, as they are wont to do, and after a several-month jury trial, the Texas probate court entered a judgment upholding the will and saying that Anna Nicole Smith did not should not receive any of the money from the estate. While that trial was pending, the widow Anna Nicole Smith ran into bankruptcy court in California and drummed up a bankruptcy petition that essentially was designed to try to assert bankruptcy court jurisdiction over the case. The supposed reason for the bankruptcy case was a claim of employment discrimination by Smith's former housekeeper, or a sexual harassment by Smith's former housekeeper. Eventually that case was dismissed and the bankruptcy case was closed. As part of that bankruptcy case, however, Pierce Marshall, the son of the deceased, filed a proof of a claim for non-dischargeability and later filed a proof of claim in the bankruptcy case asserting that Anna Nicole Smith and her lawyers had had defamed him under state law. And as a result, claiming that her case, that his claim would be non-dischargeable in the bankruptcy case of Smith. In response to that, Smith filed a counterclaim claiming that Marshall had engaged in tortious interference with a gift. The bankruptcy court then proceeded to essentially adjudicate that claim, essentially redoing in a summary fashion the very trial that was being conducted in Texas before a jury. The bankruptcy judge then entered a decision prior to the probate court in Texas. So as a matter of timing, what happened was the trial kicked off in Texas, but the bankruptcy court, because of its summary process, adjudicated the case more rapidly, entered a judgment, originally giving Smith half of the estate, later reduced to 80-something million dollars. After the bankruptcy court opinion, a judgment was entered, a jury trial, the Texas probate court came back, holding, as mentioned earlier, that Smith was entitled to nothing. After that, the bankruptcy court case was appealed up to the district court, which is an Article III court, where it's a lifetime-appointed judge for good behavior, as opposed to the bankruptcy court, which is a court of limited jurisdiction presided over by a so-called Article I judge. At that point, then, the district court entered a final decision. The first appeal in the case went up to the Supreme Court on the question of whether or not there was a probate exception to the bankruptcy code. The court at that time held there was not and remanded it back to the lower court, which brought up to this question. The question currently before the court is the question of whether or not the defamation lawsuit was and the counterclaim by Anna Nicole Smith is what is called a core claim in bankruptcy. The difference is significant. If it is a core claim in bankruptcy, that means that the bankruptcy court is entitled to enter a final judgment on the case. That would be significant here because that would mean that the bankruptcy court opinion was entered before the Texas probate opinion and as a result would have collateral estoppel and res judicata effect. If, however, the case is a non-core case, then the decision by the bankruptcy judge is only a recommendation, and only a judgment by an Article III judge can create a final judgment. If that is the case, then what would happen is that the case would not have been final until the district court acted, which would have been subsequent to the state probate court, and as a result, the state probate court would control. The Ninth Circuit held that although the counterclaim by Smith was a compulsory counterclaim, it was nonetheless not a core issue. And that's what brings it before the Supreme Court. The oral argument turned very much on very technical interpretations of the bankruptcy code and the Constitution. The touchstone question here is the constitutional question of whether or not this is the kind of case that qualifies as a core question and for which then the bankruptcy judge can enter a final judgment. And that implicates longstanding constitutional questions, and especially a case from the 1980s called Marathon Pipeline versus Northern Pipeline, which had made this core versus non-core distinction. What we see in the oral argument is a very technical two things. First, a very technical discussion of the scope of 28 U.S.C. Section 157, which are the provisions of the code that lay out what constitutes a core and what constitutes a non-core opinion. One surprise in the oral argument is that an alternative ground was offered in support of the Ninth Circuit's opinion that was not specifically held by the Ninth Circuit, which is a provision of 28 U.S.C. Section 157b5, which specifically provides that a personal injury tort and wrongful death claim shall be tried in the bankruptcy in the district court in which the bankruptcy case is pending, thereby preserving a personal injury claim. The lawyers for Mr. Marshall argued that his claim for defamation that was the subject of the non-dischargeability complaint should fit within that category. It was discussed during the opinion that that would have to provide an alternative ground for affirmance, or if the court decided that that might apply, there would have to be a remand on that particular point. The second ground was a recurrent concern, especially expressed by Justice Scalia during the oral argument, that allowing the bankruptcy judge to do this, to basically second-guess a state court, would violate the Seventh Amendment and essentially override the right of a jury trial that a party would have when it came to a state law tort claim such as this one. The case of Gran Financiera is a case a few years ago where the contours of that particular right were discussed. They were distinguished to some extent during the oral argument. So what we see is two things going on in the oral argument. First is the narrow construction of 28 U.S.C. Section 157 and its scope as a statutory question, but then also the larger constitutional questions as to whether or not the Constitution constrains the sort of questions that a bankruptcy judge can hear and enter a final judgment on. It would be difficult in a case, I think, that is as technical as this one to try to hazard a guess as to where the court would come down. The court in the first case was overwhelmingly held that there was no probate exception to the code. This case now is a much more nuanced question of what are the exact contours of the bankruptcy court case jurisdiction now that we have decided that there is no bright line limits on the court's jurisdiction. The argument, as I said, was quite technical. And while it was quite a technical case, the issues seem fairly well defined, and fairly well defined is quite a technical issue. There were larger questions that could have been raised as part of the case, but did not seem to occupy the court as part of the argument. In particular, the larger question of the opportunity for forum shopping between state courts and bankruptcy courts. Instead, the court treated this really as a question of jurisdictional power under the Constitution and under the relevant statutes under the code. This has been Todd Zawicki discussing the case of Stern versus Marshall, which is argued in the Supreme Court.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.